This is a little different than our usual Talking Too Loud episode. For starters, we're on a boat. Or we will be. It all started because Chris Levine and I went to see The Odyssey, a movie made with an almost absurd commitment to doing things for real. Christopher Nolan put his cast on real ships, out in the actual ocean, shot all over the world, and filmed the whole thing on IMAX film. And it got us thinking, why make a movie this way now, when technology makes it possible to take so many shortcuts? And what can the rest of us making things, especially in a world of AI, infinite content, and increasingly powerful creative tools, learn from that choice? So, we figured we'd get in a boat and talk about it.
This gas gauge doesn't work, so I have no idea how much your gas
that's
we
fine.
In my dad's boat.
We'll just call in help, I assume, right? Welcome to Talking Too Loud, and welcome to Rhode Island, specifically Johnson's Pond, Rhode Island. I'm here with Mr. Chris Levine, head of production at Wistia, who's actually on sabbatical. So thank you for taking a little time
get together. It's the halfway mark.
Halfway mark. How's it feel so far?
Awesome. Thinking about work with my boss right here. No, this was nice, but it's kind of like I'm welcoming you. I'm on home turf right now.
I like it. Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, I feel like I have the advantage right now.
Yeah, no, you've got the upper hand, you've got the steering wheel, too.
That's what it's all about, too. It's just all about having some hand in work relationships.
Well, look, you and I just went to see The Odyssey.
Yes.
And
on the clock.
On the clock, yeah. And The Odyssey is having a huge moment right now for good reason.
Yeah.
And I thought it'd be fun to actually, like, kind of continue the conversation we're already having about this and do it on the podcast and bring people into, like, the implications, what we saw, what's so cool about it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's what we're here to do. And we're on a boat to talk about The Odyssey.
Yeah, well, The Odyssey does take, quite a bit of it does take place at sea.
It does.
In a ship, in a vessel, not too dissimilar from this one.
So similar to this float boat. So I will say before we get going here, that if you have not seen The Odyssey and don't know the story, there will be spoilers. I just think we need to just be free. But first, I think we should just start by going into... So, Christopher Nolan.
Big fan.
Huge fan. I'm a huge fan.
Great name.
Great name. Great movies.
There is a lot in the name, I think.
There's a lot in the name, not in the name. Dunkirk, Interstellar.
If you were to rank your top, what's your top three Nolan movies? And don't even think about any of the internet hype. Just top three.
I think the top for me is Interstellar. And... And then I would probably say Dunkirk, and then Oppenheimer, and then I think like Tenet after that. What about you?
Interstellar, hands down. Probably my favorite movie of all time, yeah. Tied with Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Hit even harder after having kids too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Interstellar, I think, then it's probably Inception after Interstellar.
Yeah.
And then I would say...
I forgot Inception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably Interstellar, Inception, and I really like Dunkirk.
Yeah. But that was before seeing The Odyssey. And The Odyssey for me is like top two or three.
Yeah.
So Nolan shot The Odyssey with not just no AI, but no CGI.
Yeah.
And...
Which like, I do question. I think Nolan shot it as practical as was possible.
Yeah.
But I do think there had to be some CG in that, right?
But you know, like the pig scene, Cersei morphs his like guys into
yes.
pigs.
Yeah.
There's no CGI.
There's no CGI? Is
no.
That's all sleight of hand camera tricks?
It's puppets and animatronics and
See, that is very interesting. I would assume there had to be some CGI in that moment.
From what I have like looked up on this, there is not any, and I think that's like what's so shocking about it.
Yeah.
The one scene that I thought about was when they avoid the whirlpool.
Yes.
And then like the monster comes in, pulls people away.
Yeah.
But I think it's puppets and stuff. I think it's like cutting between practical shots on the boat.
Yeah.
And then like looking up at like a puppet coming down. And, like, you know, that's how they did the Cyclops scene. Because I saw this clip with, like, Tom Holland and Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
And they're trying to the interviewer, and they're like, there's no CGI in this movie. And they're like, oh, yeah. And they're like, no, there's no CGI. Like, we were all shocked by this as well, but like that's when they were talking about the animatronic thing of like the pigs.
Yeah.
And I saw that clip before seeing it the second time, so I watched it super closely.
Yeah.
And you could see that it's just like, he's just an unbelievable filmmaker, where it's like these quick, like these quick cuts.
Yeah, sleight of hand
and
stuff.
Sleight of hand stuff, in-camera stuff that like actually, yeah, I never really see the full thing going, well, but I thought I did. My brain thought
I did.
Oh,
yeah.
You know?
I was reading something about the set design.
Yeah.
And about IMAX. So the IMAX format is almost square.
Yeah.
It's more square than widescreen.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, it's unnaturally tall. You have to worry about everything in the shot. So like boom mics in the shot,
yeah.
But also the sets.
Yeah.
And I was reading that the camera positions were locked before the camera even arrived on set. Everything had to be thought out with how they were building these sets.
Okay.
And same thing with Oppenheimer.
Okay.
Like you didn't really have a ton of freedom, especially for the wider shots.
Yeah.
Because you can't just, you can't crop in.
Yeah.
Especially on the wide stuff.
Yeah.
So the amount of pre-production that has to go in and the fact that you have to trust your team that they're going to still be able to provide.
And they came in under budget, right?
Yeah, they finished early.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. Talk about vision. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. The point is, it feels like a very handcrafted, old school, in-camera movie.
Yeah. And I felt like the stakes of it, you feel in a way where, like, so I've seen it twice in theaters and this with you and then with my wife. And when we were in there, I'm like, just a reminder, this is not CGI. Because, like, the stakes of when they're at sea and they're in the storms and they're going by the sirens and every so many things, it feels so much more intense, I think, at least to me, when I know they actually were out there shooting this stuff. It's also looking like, I mean, it's going to be obviously one of the top grossing movies of the summer, but having a massive cultural moment about a story that's very much been out there and been done before.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like it's this combination of all these things. It's like the spectacle now is seeing something real versus the spectacle being seeing something fake.
Yeah, I heard it recouped its entire budget in the first weekend, something like that.
Yeah, and it's pacing way higher than Oppenheimer.
Is it already?
Yeah.
Well, it's apparently he rode the coattails on Oppenheimer's success to ask for this type of budget for this type of movie. Because this type of movie needed a big budget to do the way he wanted to do it. And he was only able to get the studio to say yes based on the success of his last movie, which, you know, you're only as good as your last thing. But for this one, it sounds like it really was true.
Well, yeah, because Oppenheimer did super well. Won Best Picture, and I think he got Best Director, and like he had the cachet. But I mean, one thing I found interesting was the theater was completely sold out. And the second time I saw it was a few weeks later, same exact thing, completely sold out. They're extending it, still sold out.
Yeah.
What do you think this means about like the moment we're in? What do you think it means that you can still have a movie that there's no CGI in it, there's no AI?
It feels like a lot of the movies when we were growing up and people would get excited to go to a Blockbuster, to go see, you know, Last Action Hero or like the Top Gun or, and so it feels like an old school event. Movies used to feel like an event. And like this felt electric. It felt like I was walking into a concert, which is a monoculture significant moment.
Yeah, it's a really shared experience. It also, I think, like seeing it in IMAX, I left thinking, I'm not going to be able to have this experience at home.
No way.
And so my first thought was like, I have to see this again.
Yeah, because that's it's your only chance.
Yeah.
Your only shot.
Which is just really interesting because I think if you'd said to me like 3 years ago, hey, there's going to be movies that are so exciting that you're like going to go see them multiple times in the theater and it's going to be full. Everyone's gonna be talking about it.
There's no way. Yeah.
I wouldn't have believed it.
TVs are too big at home. Your sound system's too convenient. Yeah. You have your own snacks right there. You're not trying to smuggle in snacks, which I know you're famous for smuggling.
Just a protein bar here.
Yeah,
or there.
Smuggling snacks. And he's opening crinkle the wrapper.
You know, I will say, seeing it the second time and feeling confident that I could go pee if I needed to was great.
And did you?
Yes. like an hour in, I was like, ran out and peed and came back. And I was like, we're good. Yeah. But that first, I didn't miss one frame.
No, of course. I didn't drink. I drank. I was like extremely dehydrated. I didn't drink for like 24 hours. It's like, yeah, it's like going in for surgery.
That's the commitment.
Yeah.
So Nolan has said that AI replacing creativity is BS. Do you agree?
In what context? That's a loaded question. AI replacing creativity.
Yeah.
It's BS.
Yeah.
He doesn't think AI is going to replace creativity.
Yeah.
I mean, that tracks with what he's doing. Like, he is, I wouldn't call this the anti-AI movie.
But it kind of is.
Yeah.
I mean, you could never have predicted this moment when this thing was, like, greenlit, I don't think. Because, you know, what's interesting is, like, right, like, it's so hard to get an AI to give you the true outlier ideas.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a distribution, right? So it's going to bring you the most common things.
Yeah.
So if you're doing something that's super common, it can be helpful. But if you're trying to find, like this Cyclops, we're going to make the Cyclops be 5 stories tall. We're going to do it for real. What that means is we're going to have this, like, rig that moves a giant boulder.
Oh, and by the way, we're going to do it in a cave in the middle of nowhere.
We're doing a cave in the middle of nowhere. We're going to have a giant puppet. We're going to have a human dressed as a Cyclops eating, you know, the Cyclops eating other humans, which are going to be toys. And like, the AI is not going to suggest that. Because the opposite of what you suggest, even if you said, give me the hardest version of this.
Yeah.
It's not going to put you there. It's because it's not what it's designed to do.
Yeah.
So it is interesting when you really think about like all the creative decisions that the constraints created for them of like, we're going to try to do this as for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think an AI could do it. And I think there's like that, I don't know, I keep thinking about stakes, but I also keep thinking about like effort. Like we know you can see the effort. And when it's like seamless and everything cuts perfectly and all these things, like anyone who's paying attention to that can tell there was so much effort put into this, which makes me feel like it's really valuable, which I think is like the thing that stays true even in a world with all this AI.
What I don't really understand though is for you and I to appreciate the effort and for people in the industry to appreciate the effort, that's one thing. I don't know if that's filling the seats, because like filling some of the seats,
it's filling
and it's probably
seats.
Helping some of the hype machine,
yeah.
But there's something else going on here. And I don't think it's just good marketing. I think AI,
no.
You know, it's pervasive and has entered the zeitgeist and the culture. And, you know, my dad, who's 71, is talking about AI and thinks everything is AI now.
Yeah.
So, like, people are aware of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you're right. But I think it is shocking to me that I think that is one of the draws, the handmadeness of this thing.
Well, I think it's one of them. I don't think it's the only thing. But to your point, everyone seems to think everything's AI now. Like, so I was playing a clip for my kids the other day. It's a news story. Okay, like a golden retriever that was having seizures, and they had to give it a medicine. And it seemed like it got depressed, and somehow or other, they ended up bringing a duck home and befriended the dog.
This is some dark stuff.
And they're running around, uh-huh. And like the duck is like its best buddy, and they're like wrestling, and they're all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
It looks like an AI thing, it's not. And I'm showing the girls, and I'm like, look at this.
Oh,
like,
they just dismiss
it. They're like, that dad, that's fake. And I'm like, I don't think it is. It's the news story has to go out there and actually report on this thing.
Yeah.
But their first thought was it was fake. And my kids are 8 and 10. And I've told them, be aware if stuff's fake or not.
Wow.
I
sent a photo of me and puppy Lenny.
Yeah.
My dog.
Yeah.
To Zan, your wife.
Yeah.
She was convinced it was AI. She's like, is this real or is this AI? You look too...
So, I mean, if everyone is looking for that in our culture, it does make some sense if like, well, this one's not.
Is this just then... the perfect storm of like everyone being aware of AI, everyone being critical of everything being AI.
Yeah.
In this movie, a lot of the marketing was around the fact that it was handcrafted by hand.
Yeah, I think so. And also that like get a different experience in IMAX, right? Like they leaned really hard into that, which before seeing it, I was not really sure how much better it would be. And then when I'm there watching it and you feel like it's like enveloping you, and it's a shared experience. I think that actually was
It's a perfect
correct.
Storm.
Yeah, but it's like, so I think it is a combination of really good marketing, actually, with the product delivering. But the other thing that has been on my mind is like, I just keep thinking about what are the signals we look for that tell us that something's worth our time. And like video up until incredibly recently was a pretty strong signal something's worth your time.
Right.
Like, someone makes a video.
There's effort there.
There's effort. And I think like the answer we've talked about is like, well, you just need to be authentic. You need to be authentic. And that's going to translate through to getting people to know that what you're saying is like valuable. And I think my opinion switching, which is like, yes, authenticity is important, but actually what's more important is seeing the effort. Mm. But then in a world with like a lot of AI, the question is how can you showcase the effort?
That's interesting because that's how Sora died. Because everyone knew how easy it was to make these things. And yes, they were pretty funny.
Yeah.
And if you had a good idea, it would be funnier than somebody else's. But they were so easy to make. I was getting bombarded with stuff. And it's like, I don't care. I know that you just prompted this and sent it to me. Why should I even bother?
But like if you could travel somewhere, like I went to Japan in March and I went to see the 10,000 Torii gates in Kyoto.
Uh-huh.
So it's 10,000 gates, these like orange and black gates. It has like some spiritual meaning up and down a mountain.
It's a lot of gates.
It's a lot of gates. And people tell you when you go, you got to see it. You got to see it. Why? Why do I have to see this? Well, when I was there, I was basically marveling at the human effort to put this together. And I kept thinking like, what was the idea that caused people to think this was a good idea?
Yeah.
To carry this stuff up this mountain and put it together. And then you think it's like, oh, you're going to Paris. What should you go see? It was like, well, you better go see the Eiffel Tower and you should go to the Louvre. And you should go see all the art in there. And it was like, are we actually just like, effort has been the universal language that we've used to figure out what's important or not? Like, go see the Great Pyramids, go see the Taj Mahal. Like, it took hundreds of years to build or whatever. And now AI makes it really easy to not know when there's effort. And so what we want is signals of effort. And if you can show a signal of effort, then you get value.
And so there were major signals of effort with this movie, as there were with Oppenheimer.
Yes.
Because I went crazy on Oppenheimer. Do you know that with Oppenheimer, they used so much of the budget on set design, they accelerated the shoot schedule. So it actually, the entire Oppenheimer film was shot in like less than 60 days, which is unheard of.
That's insane.
Less than 60 shoot days.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the number. Because they blew all their budget on these real world sets, like building Los Alamos.
Yeah.
So that they can shoot unfettered. And I think a lot of the same lessons were learned in Odyssey as well. But Odyssey was way more grand landscape-wise, so they needed more shoot days.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. And it's like approaching the problem the right way is what unlocks how you do that. I also was thinking about like, we just talked about this on a recent Talking Too Loud, but when we did the Lenny video, and when I say the Lenny video, I mean we made a Pixar-style short with generative AI right as it was possible.
Yep.
It was like literally the week I think you could have pulled it off.
Yep.
And it was really controversial. It was
very
like,
controversial.
Lots of people loved it, lots of people hated it. But one of the most interesting things for me was when we did the live Q&A about that, and Billy was showing his process.
Yeah.
And he made like 1,500 iterations of Lenny.
Yeah.
Literally.
Oh, yeah.
And people who were there realized every scene in that short, he was putting in that much effort. It was the reaction was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And it was like, we basically got to see the effort. And I think the people who understood that effort were like, this thing's awesome. And the people who thought it was just one prompt that did it were like, doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there is effort that goes into AI.
There is. Like, using it properly takes effort. And I think like, having the right ideas, the creative approach, like solving problems that people haven't solved before is all like takes effort.
I do think it is more of an uphill battle to prove the effort with AI. You need to really know that these tools are not type in a prompt and get a finished, you know, feature film. So I think it is more of a, you know, lowest common denominator can appreciate that the effort that went into Odyssey was handcrafted and worth people's time, worth people's ticket price.
But it is funny, back to Nolan's thing of like AI doesn't solve for creativity. It's like there are people today, there are companies, there's like that, you know, that the GLP-1 company that was like worth like $1.8 billion that was written about in New York Times. It's like two-person company.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But you know what they were doing was making avatar videos of fake doctors giving advice about GLP-1s.
Yeah.
Which is shut down. Right? So like...
Thankfully.
Yeah, but like, so people abusing the system.
Yeah.
Okay, there's people abusing the system, AI videos, you hear a story like that. But guess what? Really quick, it's going to get shut down. You can't have fake people giving endorsements of things. Like, it's not, you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
So that's like a very fleeting opportunity, which ultimately gets us back to, you can have AI helping you, but you need to have a human looking at it, elevating it, asking questions of it that were never asked before, seeing it from an angle that they couldn't have seen before, or getting advice from it and realizing, even though this is the standard advice, I think it is incorrect, and I'm still going to go in the other direction.
I still, this slot machine, specifically around generative video, have you heard that YouTube's canceling thousands of AI slop channels?
Yeah.
Like these teenagers in the middle of, you know, nowhere in the world, whatever, were making thousands of dollars selling ads on AI slop. People are catching on.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the end game is on this, but Claude, you saw the watermark thing.
Yeah.
Now any text that comes out of Claude is going to have a digital watermark.
Yeah.
You got the LinkedIn, feels like AI slop button. I think there is an opportunity to put your flag in the ground about AI slop and about being no, like anti-AI slop from a video and a content perspective. And that is an extremely nuanced stance because, all right, where's the line? Like, can you use transcriptions? Can you use AI to help you edit the video? Or is it specifically just the AI avatars? Can you use AI to train your voice? Like, I think there is a there's a little bit of a gradient there.
I agree with you because I think that like you're going to use AI in a ton of different ways to help you because there's a bunch of parts of the process that weren't super creative.
Yeah.
That just are helping you. Like, should you allow it to help you do transcription for you? Can you edit by editing the transcription? Can you have it do a first pass even of real footage? It's incredibly different than generating something that's pure AI.
Generating an AI doctor telling you that this new drug is fantastic and all
but
my patients
but
are like
is it okay if you have an actor or a person who's doing a podcast and misspeaks or says something you can't hear very well and you dub their voice and
tune it up,
like in my world, I think it probably is okay to do that.
That's why it is a nuance. It is a gradient. It's a spectrum.
But I do agree with you that I think that like, if you're just making AI slop, like that's not going to work. And it's a mistake. It's going to hurt your brand. The scary part is because everyone's so on alert for AI slop, is that the stuff you're making that isn't AI slop at all that people think is. And that's where I think this gets really hard. That's almost the part that keeps me up at night more, is like you do it the other way. And like, how do you showcase the effort so obviously that people are like, yeah, this isn't AI slop. Like, wait, and when it's not. Like, cause we saw this with old videos. So like, this AI slop, it's like, it's not, I'm there. We did this.
Yeah.
And like, that is like.
Wow, yeah. And so, that is why there is the behind the scenes vignettes and the Apple's doing, you know, made by humans. And then you hear, click here to watch the behind the scenes. And even if you just watch a couple frames of that, you're like, oh, okay. Like that registers.
Totally.
And I don't know if doing a behind the scenes on everything is the answer. But.
I don't know. I mean, here's the funny thing about that. Let's say you do it behind the scenes on anything important. And then... does it need to get as many views as the other thing? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because if it gets the right people to see it, then they're going to defend it and they're going to tell others about it.
Yeah.
But like, that is a nuanced take, which is like, hey, do it for real. Use AI where it helps, but don't make AI slop. Show the behind the scenes to prove that you did it. And know that like, that's got to be in the link of the description. It's like, you're basically, it is harder. You want to do it for real and you want people to pay attention, you got to make two videos every time instead of one.
So how does this... All right. I know you're supposed to be asking me questions.
No, just this is a conversation.
It's a conversation. We're talking.
We're on the pod.
We're talking too loud. Actually, I think our volume's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
You did get loud a couple times.
Yeah, I did. Well, I think without this motor noise, I think we'd be pretty loud.
You were speaking very loudly.
Thank you so much.
Your mother must be so proud.
She really is.
How does this apply to people making their next product video or their next front page video? Because I've been out of the office for now 2 weeks, and I haven't really thought much about video at all.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking a little bit about it now. And before I went out, I was really struggling with knowing what the company and what Wistia needed from me.
Yeah.
Before the rise of AI, I was very confident we needed this culture video. This yeah. video needed this moment to break it up and be comedic. This yeah. product video needed to be very straight ahead, screencast yeah. driven. Right now, I don't know what people want. I don't know if people want to see extremely long, drawn out screenshots of the product with no fluff whatsoever so that they can actually understand how the software works. I don't know if people want to see some crazy hook at the beginning of the video
yeah.
so that they actually watch the video. So how are you advising people with all of this stuff that we're talking about with the Odyssey and stuff like that? How are you advising people like approach video at their business right now?
I mean, I think the thing for me is that it really depends like what type of video it is. Like I think if you're trying to do awareness videos, like you're going to have to, the stuff we're tackling right now is stuff that I think you're going to have to figure out how to get in there. Like if you're making awareness videos, they're not going to go organically viral for a good reason if they're made purely with AI. Unless the whole gimmick is you're selling to an audience that only wants AI, doesn't want any of this other stuff, but you're behind the scenes talking about how you did it in one prompt, like that might go.
But then you're also, for an awareness videos, you're also competing with a bunch of remarkable stuff that's made either by humans or by AI too.
That's why I think the stuff that seems like, what I'm noticing seems to matter a lot more is like doing the live events
mm.
and breaking those down and showing the things in those as a way to establish the brand of like, hey, this is, let me show you another signal of this being important. It's like, there's a person that you recognize doing a thing. There might be an audience there. My first instinct is not that this is fake, because it would be so bad for the person who's on there, right? Like if Tim Cook was launching a thing and people sniffed that was a Tim Cook avatar, he's cooked.
Oh yeah.
Tim Cook is cooked.
I like that.
Yeah. and I think that seems like any of the technology companies that are doing this are trying to take that approach.
Yeah.
I think that like, if you're like a B2C company where you've always been about like newsjacking and that like you're not being judged in the same way, like if your thing is crappy, it's being judged. If it's funny and interesting, like that's what matters more than anything. But I think as you get deeper in the funnel, I think it gets easier, which is just like showcase ways of showing the effort. Like I don't think that people, there's even videos probably where like it doesn't matter that much if there's AI in it. If it's like a walkthrough video that like a very small number of your customers are going to see, but it's really descriptive and it helps solve your problem, the support video, I don't yeah. think you really care.
Yeah.
There. It might annoy you, but like you don't really care if it solves a problem. Versus like if you're making videos that are communicating with your team, people care a lot if there's AI in that video.
Yep.
I mean, we're seeing just right this week, someone shared in the senior management Slack room, like a thing on basically like you can't be sharing AI writing and like do a big analysis and share just the AI writing version because everyone discounts it even if it's correct.
Yeah.
So you have to actually do the, even if you have gotten some amazing insight by using AI, you have to synthesize it yourself. You have to highlight the important parts. Like if you don't do that, people aren't going to give it the like time and attention that
that's,
it deserves.
That's the stop AI slop in Slack.
Yeah.
Love that.
And like, I just saw Clay, which is like another software AI company, just released that they had to do the exact same thing because now it's people are getting all these insights, but which part of this insight is the most important? Like we have a limited amount of time to do things. Like you have to do the hard work of being the editor. And I do think that we're gonna see a big return on all of this. And so for videos, it's like, the same thing. It's kind of the same. Like if you're making AI slot videos that your sales team is making, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And if they sniff it, it's not going to work.
Yeah. But it's so tempting. It's so easy.
And it might be fine to prove out a video.
Yeah.
But I think it's like, look, we don't get a lot of credit for this, but like a lot of our editing tools are not videos to help you make AI slop. There are videos to help you make a human video better with AI.
Yep.
And I would suggest like attempting that first. There's gonna be an infinite number of places where people want to have a walkthrough. They want someone to explain something to them. And I think the hard part is figuring out like, should this be short? Should it be long? Should it be on a boat? Should it be at your desk? Should it be with a phone? Like it's actually—
scripted,
like,
unscripted.
All of that, those are a million creative decisions that matter. And I mean like in a weird way, like your job I think was easier 10 years ago, but I think your job is more important now. Like I think the video producer who has great tastes, their job is far more important today than it was before because of all of these changes.
Well, my job was way easier 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Just by having a video that was half decent, that maybe had a little bit of humor in a B2B video, you would, that was it, that was
but
all you needed.
But humor is still hard. AI is not good at humor.
No, it's pretty bad actually.
Because like humor is like of the moment. Like to have something that's really funny today, you have to be aware of the stuff that's happening around us and like where the culture's at and all these things. And that's not a thing that AI is good at doing.
Yeah.
And it's, I wouldn't be surprised if it just stays that way.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a really long answer, but I think it's the truth, which is like creativity matters more. You have to think about where in the funnel it is. There's an insatiable need for content. Like that's what's crazy. That has changed. Like, right? Everybody wants the option to watch something.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily, you're not always going to do it, but like you want to watch or you want to read or you want to listen.
One thing somewhat related to Odyssey, but not tangent. It's my other favorite, one of my favorite guys, Spielberg. Ever heard of him?
Yeah, I heard of him.
Made a crazy dinosaur movie and then a pretty decent sequel. did you happen to see the trailer for Disclosure Day that featured Steven Spielberg in the trailer? This was like some weird breaking of the fourth wall type thing.
Yeah.
It was literally, it wasn't a behind the scenes vignette. It was a hybrid of an actual standard like Don LaFontaine trailer voice guy trailer.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you see Spielberg. And he's talking, so it like reminds the viewer that this is made by one of the greats. And I thought that was a very interesting and very intentional signal. That they're in decision that they're making for their marketing of that movie, which I heard was garbage. I haven't even watched it yet, but
I saw it. It was good, but it was not like his. It was not his best.
Yeah,
it just didn't like. I was really hoping for more. It was like kind of confusing at parts, and then I just didn't care enough.
Yeah. What is it about the Odyssey that like every?
Well, here's another thing.
I don't get the cultural hype around it. It doesn't make sense to me. Is it because so many people, is it because of, it's probably a lot of things like we're talking about. It's the intersection of AI and handmade stuff in the culture. It's Oppenheimer doing so well. It's almost like a surreal moment for cinema that it's doing this well. I can't think of another movie that's done this well that has created that type of buzz.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I was thinking about was this is the guy that made Memento.
Yeah.
And like, if you haven't seen Memento, incredible movie, and it really deals with like time in a really interesting way and memory in a really interesting way. But it was like so creative and different from everything else at its time. And that is the guy who just made The Odyssey.
Yeah.
Which in many ways is like a very traditional
story.
Yeah. But still the same guys is, I don't know, it's like there's his approach, I think, in it just like shows through.
Not but, to fanboy out too, but I.
We're out of the second drink here.
Oh, nice. Cheers.
Cheers.
Lime boys. You know, not to be an obsessive fanboy on Nolan, but I do like that he's got his crew.
Yeah.
He's got his crew. He took a detour off of Hans Zimmer. That's fine. Hans Zimmer wrote some incredible scores for some of his movies. And the guy Ludwig, what's his name? His new guy that scored Oppenheimer and Odyssey, fantastic. But he's got his crew. He's got the composer. He's got Hoyt Van Hoytma, who is the DP. He's got Emma Thomas, his wife, who is the main producer. Now he's got his main cast of characters that he's dealing with over and over again.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy, Damon. He's got this whole crew.
Yeah.
Pattinson. I think it's really sick to see like somebody with his crew. Because I feel like I have my crew.
Yeah.
I got my crew of people that freelancers when I need to call them on. I have the crew of people that I've worked with at Wistia. I know like I have my crew, and it's sick that he's tight with this crew of actors and movie producers, and they can be so amenable to new types of movies and concepts too.
I think about that a lot. I think about that with Wistia, and I think that like,
yeah, we got a crew. We got some longevity.
We have a ton of longevity, and I think a lot of like really amazing companies end up with that. Because I think that hard things and doing world-class things, like, it takes a long time. Most of the things, right? You can't, if it was really, really easy and quick, like, it would be easy, but it's not. Most of the things are really hard. And then having a crew that has, like, a very high level of trust and understanding, knows how to have everybody working at their best, you know, and it's certain things that, like, yeah, you should get better at, and certain things don't get better at. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Like, someone else, you don't have to learn how to shoot or like also do music.
We
like
got
just,
it.
Please.
Yeah,
like,
we got
do
it.
The thing you're world class at the moment that I need you to do it.
Yeah.
And I do think there's a lot of like unspoken language that ends up forming in these like world class teams. And so for me, it's like, it's what's really important is often like defending that small team that can do the world class thing. Cause it's really easy not to as well. And yeah, I think Nolan clearly has done that, but a lot of the greats in filmmaking, I've done that. I think a lot of the greats in software have done that. It's just like they figured out, oh, this tiny crew with the right team was able to do all these unbelievable things. I mean, Apple, right? With like the Johnny Ive days, Steve Jobs, it was like the famous like design team at Apple. It was like seven people that was behind so many of the core unbelievable products.
Yep.
Over a very long period of time. Now, is the team, is Apple seven people? No, it's like tens of thousands of people. But they figured out a way to have that crew doing world-class work that was like amplified, magnified, improved by everyone around them.
Yeah.
It's also why I think like often like small teams can outcompete big ones. Because if you get the right combo with a small team, you can run circles around a big team that doesn't have the like right vibes and the right connection and the right communication. And you know,
it's like a group of soldiers, you know, trying to beat a giant, you know, cyclops.
Exactly right. Just like a group of soldiers in a cave trying to find their way out.
Yeah, they got to sacrifice a couple guys to get out. It's just like that. And you got the sheep and everything.
And you've got that really good cheese.
Oh, fantastic. Cheese just everywhere. Spoiler alert.
Most of the Odyssey is about cheese and food. Do you have any hot takes on things you think we're going to see next in film? Like, do you think that this will change what gets greenlit? Do you think it'll change the culture?
I think I would say to score one for the creatives with this one. I think there's been a lot of creative angst, or there's been a lot of angst from creatives around the rise of AI and hearing, you know, Lionsgate bought Ben Affleck's AI software, and now they're going to start prompting out movies. And
yeah.
And I was obviously very affected by a lot of the fallout with the Lenny Pixar thing. So I think this is going to galvanize creatives, but I don't necessarily think it's going to change the trajectory of AI progression and AI jumping into Hollywood and starting to eat Hollywood and eat streaming. The tech is getting too good. There's too much money around it, and there's too much money to be made from licensing IP. So, dare I say, I think this probably drives a wedge even further in the divide, because you're going to have people that are like, this is great because it wasn't made with AI. But that's not necessarily the case.
Well, tell me if you agree with this, which is like, what you're saying is like, this might be just a temporary moment where you can even feel the bifurcation between it being real or not. And I think we just don't know. Because I think the other side of it, at least today, the attention, most people's attention is on like social. But like when social is slop, the recaps that we just did with Frank, social media manager, and Aubrey Bracco, season 50 winner from Survivor. Just kidding. If you didn't listen to that one, go listen. If social's slop, social's dead, right? Yeah. Like, no one will go to it. And you and I, back to, like, you can feel it, you can see it and feel it. Like, I, you know, I've been feeling it way more on LinkedIn recently, which has caused me, instead of just posting on LinkedIn, which is mostly what I was doing, but I would peruse other stuff. I'm definitely, there's a lot less stuff right now that I is like pulling me in, making me think this is like worthwhile.
Yeah.
And I do think there's probably like an opportunity for a social network that somehow has zero slop and proves it in some way.
Be real.
I mean, that was the attempt of that, but that required so much work out of people.
Yeah.
You know, it's also interesting because, like, I keep trying to think of the historical precedents, right? Like, Jurassic Park has CGI in it.
Famously,
so,
yeah.
Famously. And that was a big part of why I think they sold that. It was like, pay attention. Like, the dinosaurs are so real, you've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
But the story is so incredible. And the CGI has aged really well.
It's aged remarkably well. But it's because there's so little CGI. There's like, something like 5 minutes of dinosaur screen time in Jurassic Park.
Yes.
That's it. If you watch any of the new Jurassic Worlds, it's garbage.
Yeah.
It's all CG for the most part. There are a couple of, like, they throw the audience a bone to have, like, one puppet, you know, baby Stegosaurus, whatever. But, like, it's all CG, so nothing's remarkable anymore. And it doesn't hold up because you have too much time to sit in there and critique it.
Yeah.
I've watched the Welcome to Jurassic Park scene, the Jurassic Park Jeeps roll up and you see the Brachiosaur and they do move and herd scene. I've watched that probably 200 times because of my kids. We watch this over and over.
I was
going to
say, you've watched it way more than 200 times.
Probably watched it more than 200 times.
With your kids, I believe.
With my kids, yeah.
I believe 200 with your kids.
Very recently. So I've watched this Brachiosaur, like, I've spent a lot of time with this. And you spend enough time with it, okay, yeah, the shadowing's tough, there's not a lot of muscle moving, blah, blah, blah. But Spielberg famously leaves you wanting more with this stuff. So as filmmakers, as video producers, like, how do you leave people wanting more? Like, because that's the feeling that's gonna resonate, I think, with folks after they finish your video or after they finish your movie. And I didn't really leave Oppenheimer wanting more. That was a long movie, but I did want to experience it again in the theater.
Yeah.
Because of these films are such incredible experiences. So,
you know, I'm also like, we saw that clip from Dune 3.
Oh yeah.
So before the Odyssey starts it, if you see it in IMAX 70mm, they play a clip that starts with a note, right?
Yeah, from thank you, Chris. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Chris Nolan, for giving me the opportunity.
I love that all of his buddies call him Chris, but he's Christopher Nolan.
For giving me the opportunity to share this clip with Odyssey audiences, like,
In IMAX,
Denis Villeneuve. And I knew Dune 3 was coming out, and I'd seen Dune 2, and I thought it was great. I thought Dune 1 was great. But I wasn't honestly that excited to see it before this clip.
Yeah.
We watched the clip.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, put my jaw on the floor. Yeah. And it was very clear that this is going to be a wild experience.
Oh yeah.
To watch this movie. And obviously it has tons of CG in it.
Oh, tons of CG. It's like, but it's like the Saving Private Ryan scene, the D-Day scene in space.
But I think it's so interesting because, like, what's the lesson in that is, like, it had the note at the beginning. It's like Denny being familiar with, like, Crystal, it's his buddy.
It had the note.
Telling us a special thing.
I didn't really pick up on that.
Me either. It's just, I experienced it, but it's a huge deal. And then when you watch the clip, it's so engaging. And watching it in IMAX, I'm like, I am seeing Dune 3 in IMAX. The thought I had was, I felt like we almost didn't book the tickets early enough to see the Odyssey. And the first thought I had was, like, we have got to book these tickets the second.
I got you. Don't worry. I got you.
I know you do. But, like, that was the first thought I had.
I know, you and I, we were like mouth agape for that. Like,
yeah.
And the movie hadn't even started yet.
Yeah, just, I mean, a lot of this just seems like, I think it's like, you're going to tell me this is too optimistic, but I feel like it's like, creativity's never been more important than it is now. Because all the slop is the same and you can smell it. And, like, what you're going to have to do each week is going to be honestly different based on what technology is available. But the people who are the most creative, who have the right license, because you do need the license to do it, they're going to be able to attack these problems and come up with like unbelievable things that actually will maybe in terms of standing out, like there's not going to be as much of that. There really isn't. It's going to be infinite slot, but less invested in the pure creative stuff. But I think what it's going to take to do that pure creative stuff is going to be different.
I'm not going to poo-poo that idea. I know I've accused you of being overly optimistic on stuff, but I appreciate that take, and I hope that you're right.
I just think we're seeing tons of examples of people making slop that works. And so everyone's going to want to do that. And it's like, well, it might be the moment. It might be like that GLP-1 thing. Like, yeah. It may not actually be... there's a lot of reasons why that might be really fleeting and not applicable to others. Well, look, this is awesome. Thank you for having me out here.
Thank you for joining me. I can't believe we haven't run out of gas yet. We've been going pretty good. It still says full, but I know it is not full. This has been broken all summer.
So what did we learn on the high seas? I think the big thing is that AI doesn't make creativity less important. It actually puts more pressure on us to be creative. Because when anyone can make more stuff faster, and when the tools give us a million different ways to make it, the hard part becomes knowing what's actually worth doing. That's where taste comes in. Point of view, knowing when to use a tool, when not to use it, and when the harder way might actually be the better way. The goal isn't to automate away the creative process, it's to use these tools to push the creative process further. Also, bring protein bars to the movies. And when in doubt, record a podcast on a float boat. We're taking a little break for the end of summer, but we'll be back on September 15th with a brand new episode of Talking Too Loud. See you then.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia. Hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubow, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham of Edit Audio. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.